You are listening to the 7th episode of the GITM podcast, the anime and comic book podcast which we take things one arc further. I am your friendly neighborhood host, Jamal, today. Hope you are having a great week. This week's been kind of interesting for me. I've been binging loads of Monogatari, also been trying to catch up with seasonal anime, getting more into comic books, and that links me right into what we're going to be speaking about today. As today I'm going to be speaking about Fantastic Four Issue 1. Note, similarly to what I'll do in the next episode, of which, yeah, I'll be speaking about Deceased in the next episode, this is going to be slightly a bit of an early review, as I'm talking about the first issue of Fantastic Four Volume 6. So keep that in mind, as I might be inconsiderate as to future plot points. So there is not much for me to say here. Let's get right into the review. As always, updates on Twitter. Hope you have a wonderful day. I'll see you on the other side. This is the 7th episode of the GITM podcast, a review of Fantastic Four Issue 1, Volume 6. Family is very important, but let's define family. Family is more than simply the genes we share, or your parents give to you, or the blood of which is similar to your parents or your siblings. It's the bond you share, it's the philosophy of which you may share, and the dynamic of which you have between each other. And in Fantastic Four, that is very prominent. It's the camaraderie between individuals and the ideals of which they share in relation to justice and all those other things that make up that unit that is family. But what happens when that all breaks down? And that is what we learned from Fantastic Four, Volume 6, Issue 1. Fantastic Four Volume 6 Issue 1, or I will mostly refer to it in today's episode as Fantastic Four Issue 1, although it's not the first Fantastic Four comic of which was ever made, which makes sense. But the thing about Fantastic Four Issue 1 is that it explores what happens when that family unit breaks down, and most importantly, who is left behind and what they have to deal with in that time. And the most important part of that theme is how do they deal with things? And we see those different approaches come through very clearly in today's issue. So, who is behind Fantastic Four Issue 1? I'm literally going to say all of the names of who's on the team for both the first and second part, as this is kind of a two-part issue, as it introduces the antagonist and who's left behind as a result of the events previously to Fantastic Four Issue 1. So the main person behind this, I would say, is Dan Slott, very famous for his run on The Amazing Spider-Man. Really, really good. I would love to review some of his work in future episodes. I'm quite the fan of Dan Slott, and that's probably one of the reasons why I bought a signed version of this issue, just because I like Dan Slott and his writing so much. And now the long list of names in the team. Apologies in advance if I get any of these wrong. I just like to give credit where credit is due. So the long list goes as follows. Sarah Pincelli, Elisabetta De Miro, Marte Gracia, Joe Caramagna, Tom Bevoort, Elena Smith, Simone Branchi, and Marco Russo. Again, apologies if I pronounce any of those wrong. I just wanted to give credit to the team behind all of this. But let's get right into the review, as we will be going into things concerning Secret Wars and a few things in other areas. So, spoilers, yeah, as this is heavily based on the fallout from Secret Wars. So if you haven't really concluded Secret Wars, or you simply just haven't started this, you might want to read that first before listening to this, or if you don't mind, just jump right in. But with all the warning stuff out of the way, what is Fantastic Four Issue 1 about? And that, calls for a plot summary. Reed and Susan are gone, and that is the hard and fast truth. Reed, Susan, and the kids are gone. They're not returning. They haven't been seen for a long time. And now the two members of the Fantastic Four, who now remain, the Human Torch and the Thing, have to pick up the pieces. As a result of Secret Wars and the conclusion, with Reed's efforts to try and mend the multiverse and then creating what we now call the all new, all different Marvel multiverse or universe, Reed hasn't returned. And although he thought that this was an amazing and sort of righteous sacrifice, which it was, it saved the entire multiverse, who wouldn't think that? It wasn't the perfect ending, as two of his greatest comrades now go damaged from this event. And it now is down to them to, as I said before, pick up the pieces, as he didn't consider who was left behind. So in summary, Fantastic Four issue 1 deals with the fallout of Secret Wars and the emotional impact upon the two remaining members of the Fantastic Four. The story ultimately picks them up at their weakest, when they are arguably most emotionally damaged, and the way that the story develops in this issue gives them a false sense of hope, which plays on their emotions, and the dynamic between the Thing and the Human Torch is ultimately damaged, not only because of that, but as a result of Reed Richards' actions. So, let's talk about the issue and what we're dealing with here. The first thing I think that was really quite captivating about Fantastic Four issue 1 was how it went about introducing the remaining members of the Fantastic Four. And by that I mean showcasing their sort of approaches to handling such an event. There is quite a high level differentiation between Ben and Johnny in the way that they deal with loss. Well, a supposed loss, as the end of the issue does suggest that there may be some sort of return of our two members and their kids, but if we assume that didn't happen, let's just say that they're gone. Both Ben and Johnny have two very different approaches, and that is really what Signal in the Sky is based upon. Johnny's approach is probably the more painful one, I think, and the one that illustrates the most that there is a high level of underlying pain through the loss of his comrades, and that is mostly in the way that I think he tries to mask that in the way that he tries to assume this hero's position. At the beginning of the issue, we of course see him at the baseball park. He's having the what seems to be the time of his life, living his best life, doing local stuff. But when you slowly start to realize, or not slowly, but when you take into account that he has lost two comrades, it all seems too good to be true, as the introduction does show that straight away in both the summary and the opening pages or panels. Johnny continues to try and be the quote-unquote hero that he should be by trying to stop the false attack on the Fantastic Four, and then just shows it to be kids, which was kind of sad. That anticlimax, again, I'll talk a bit about later. But Johnny's approach is, let me be a hero, let me continue to do what we were supposed to do, and hopefully that sort of pain will be masked away. But later in the issue, which I'm very proud about, is that that layer eventually is just stripped off as he's confronted with such emotions when it comes to the whole idea of marriage and being Ben's best man. And that bit was really tough to read, and I say tough to read in a good way. I think when someone, and by someone I mean a writer, tries to manipulate your emotions by pushing those triggers in the way that Johnny kind of comes across as really angry and really raw. And returning to the point before about it being hard to read, it's hard to read because you kind of feel his pain. he has a point, and therefore you kind of have to not sit with him and be on his side, but you can't deny that Reed would be the perfect best man. So what I am trying to say is that when Johnny is confronted with emotion, it is so much more painful, it is so much more raw, as opposed to when he's trying to mask that and carry on this whole hero persona. We see that sort of hero persona, or should I say pretense, when he's with his other sort of hero buddies, such as Luke Cage and all the other people, and he kind of just acts as if nothing happened, and we should sentence these children like actual adults, but meanwhile, we all know kind of that that isn't particularly necessary in that case. What he tries to do, as I've said multiple times, is mask that pain through his sort of fun-loving nature, acting as if he's a large, mature adult, but meanwhile, and this isn't really an attack on Johnny, as I'm quite the fan of Johnny's character, but he appears to be more of a vulnerable child. He kind of is the 12-year-old that tries to act as if he's the 20-year-old that can fend for himself, but meanwhile, well, his mom knows best. And weird analogy, I know, very weird analogy, but what I meant by that is that he doesn't want to act as if he's aimless, and acts as if he has these daily incentives and daily motivations, but meanwhile he is just like everybody else who feels that very same way. But let's now talk about Ben. Ben, or the Thing, takes quite the different approach, and he kind of acts as if he's stuck in the past. And this time I will try not to use some weird analogies as I did just before, because now listening to that sounded very weird. But let's move forward, talking about Ben. So Ben, again, acts as if he's stuck in the past. He gives us that very vivid image of when he was on that mission with both Susan Reed and, of course, our now metaphorical man-child, Johnny. He gives a very clear image of it, and you can just tell with that amount of detail how much camaraderie means to him, and to lose that is such a big deal. One of the main approaches which I picked up on when it came to Ben was that, unlike Johnny, he takes a day-by-day approach, and through some of the panels we can kind of see that he doesn't try to be this grandiose public figure that he once was when the Fantastic Four wasn't disbanded, so that being pre-Secret Wars. The Fantastic Four now are gone, and sadly enough, Ben recognizes that and acknowledges it, unlike Johnny, who tries to still be this larger-than-life person and still assumes the whole identity of the Human Torch. And although, yes, someone is probably telling me that you can't say that because the Thing has this permanent identity of being the quote-unquote Thing, so how can you say he isn't taking on that persona, versus Johnny, who is, yes, the Human Torch, but can switch between fiery mode, I like to call it fiery mode, or non-fiery mode. And you're kind of right, but what I would say to that is that although Ben can't do anything about that, he doesn't really care anymore, and that is the part that hurts the most. He is stuck in this body of his for however long, and although he's come to terms with that, he's still stuck in this physical persona, but it's the fact that he doesn't really care that he is the quote-unquote Thing anymore. He is just Ben. The Fantastic Four is done, and that's it. He is now trying to move on with life. You see that with the lovely proposal to his girlfriend in the issue, which was quite touching indeed. But what I am trying to get to really is just identity is very important in this issue, and I don't think you can approach this without thinking about identity and who takes up which identity. Ben really just doesn't really care about his previous identity being the Thing, whereas Johnny does. But I wanted to leave this part for a bit later, And that is the fact that they aren't gone, and that kind of shows us the sort of emotional integrity of our two other heroes. Towards the end of A Signal in the Sky, we do get evidence that they are alive and should be returning post-Secret Wars. It has been a really, really, really long time. Like, damn it, like, you should have brought back the Fantastic Four ages ago. Like, years ago, please. But if we move that to one side, it is kind of a relief. I think, overall, if we're talking structurally here, Fantastic Four number one goes along the whole hope is lost, and then an anti-climax Fantastic Four fake signal from those kids into more hope is lost and anger and emotion, and then boom, they might actually be coming back with the whole signal in the sky thing. And then we go to the Doctor Doom stuff, which is like, let's bring our readers back down to reality. So just to round up the things for Signal in the Sky before I head into the Doctor Doom content, emotion is very important when it comes to the Fantastic Four story. Dan Slott's efforts, as well as the rest of the team when it comes to art and editing and all of that, to make our characters different in their approach and not everyone feeling like 2D objects that deal with things in the same way, is very smart from them, and I appreciate that for a first issue. Of course, it's only beginning, so I can't give you loads and loads of character insights and opinions to say that, oh yeah, this might not be so good as this happens later on, but I'm invested in it. I'd love to see the dynamic change and alter as a result of the presence of Susan and Reed coming back to the team potentially. But now into the Doctor Doom content. I think I'm going to do the Doctor Doom content now, and then do the meme segment, our weekly meme segment thing for today's issue, and then I'll wrap things up. So, let's talk Doctor Doom. As I said, the Doctor Doom segment is quite bleak-ish, and the reason I say that is because of the whole transition between the two. By the end of Signal in the Sky, we get this massive sort of ray of hope that things might be okay, things might be good, and then Doctor Doom kind of just says, nope, get back down here and listen to me because I'm gonna stir things up for this plot. Doctor Doom hasn't gone anywhere as evidenced by this issue. In fact, he's doing what he does best. He's simply just not in Battle World this time. But the thing I think is really interesting about the Doctor Doom section is that, ironically, it gives us idea that there is a sort of larger threat out there besides Doctor Doom. I know it's all about things being interesting all the time, but what I think is even more interesting than that is that Doctor Doom seemed as if he was the kingpin or the be-all and end-all during Secret Wars, but now he doesn't seem like a small fry, but he's kind of seems as if he's not the only one in the mix of things. With the whole warning thing from what seemed to be like one of his members or a visitor into his sort of secret society of robots and evil and crazy stuff, I do think that emotion is still king in Fantastic Four and the whole Fantastic Four universe or world, if you will. And that applies exactly the same way to Victor Von Doom. Victor Von Doom still values pride as much as most antagonists. In fact, he has a large amount of pride, and he kind of deserves that pride post-Secret Wars. And now he's even rolling over that pride with the whole thing about people still fear this mask, and I still have potential to dominate, whether that's the world or the multiverse, whatever it is. Victor Von Doom is not simply just washed up, if we're using fighting game terms here. To summarize, I think the whole Victor Von Doom segment just clarifies that I'm not gone, and Victor Von Doom is still a threat. Don't think he went anywhere just because Secret Wars is over. He is still relevant, and he is someone to be scared of. But I think that's all the serious content over. I hope you liked all that. But now we're plunging into some memes to round today's episode off. So without further ado, here is what I've been working with. I've been trying to think of something. It's kind of just a segment where I talk about memes that relate to the comic or the anime which you're speaking about. This time being Fantastic Four Volume 6 Issue 1. I don't have a name for it. That applies to next episode as well, which I'll be speaking about Deceased. And to let you guys in on a secret, I kind of recorded that before this. So I'm more clueless about the meme segment in next week's episode than I am in this week's episode. Just so you know that, weird, before you guys freak out. Although I know you won't freak out, but yeah. So today is my first attempt at the meme segment, of which we'll be speaking about things that related to this book meme-wise. So I'm going to put some music here and hope you enjoy it. I think the first meme that is perfect for today's issue is Glass in the First Half, Not Gonna Lie, or I think it goes, they got us in the first half, not gonna lie. Again, I love that meme, but I think it's really good for this issue because so many anti-climaxes. There were literally two anti-climaxes, one of which was a bit more symbolic, and one that was, okay, it wasn't really an anti-climax, but it was more of a build-up and then leading to hope or a positive ending. So just to like rephrase that, it kind of was a false flag in the way that they built up all this negative emotion, and then bang, they're actually coming back possibly, which I think was quite cool actually. So the signal in the sky kind of is the second half or the first half, not gonna lie, part of the meme, if I'm really gonna dissect it and be really technical. And yeah, it was quite funny to know that in the end, they actually are coming back and they're not dead and no one really cared about them. Next meme. The next meme that works really well for this, and this is kind of a wholesome meme, is careful, he's a hero, and everyone liked that. I think everyone liked that is a bit more relevant at the moment, so I'll go with that. Everyone liked that is a Fallout meme. I don't really know the context, but I do like it quite a lot. I don't use it in my formats, because I do make a few memes, but I don't use it personally. I do think it's quite a nice one to apply to the engagement between the Thing and his girlfriend. I think that was just a nice touching moment. It was actually quite a twist. I honestly didn't see it coming, as I thought that this issue was going to be very dark when I started reading it, as it was going to be kind of the Thing reminiscing of all these moments that went well and things that he can't get back. But actually, that twisted things quite a bit and made it a bit more smooth to read. Of course, they hit us again with another just twist. Not really a twist, but a bit more pain when Johnny's like, no, it should have been Reed Richards being your best man. Kind of a bittersweet moment. But overall, I kind of liked that part. I do think everyone liked that. I think everyone does like a bit of, not cheesy romance, but a bit of touching romance, just to soothe the wounds a bit. But I think that's going to end it for the meme segment of today's episode. So, as always, if you want to give your opinions, getinthemecha@gmail.com. If you want to email me on opinions when it comes to the show, also, feel free to tweet me and follow me at GetInTheMecha. That's Twitter at GetInTheMecha. Or just your opinions, and hopefully I can get a few out in the episodes. And just to give my final verdict before I sort of end it off here, I had quite a lot of fun with this, and I don't know if fun is the word to use. I think the word is more I connected with it, not particularly on a personal level, but I knew where the characters were coming from. And I think, again, writing that is good at distinguishing between two characters, rather than just thinking that everyone takes things in the same way, is very impressive, and I think that is some good attention to detail. I'd love to read this story evolve into something further, still keeping emotion as a centerpiece of the Fantastic Four issues, as I think the whole notional family, which I discussed right at the beginning of the episode, is super important to move forward with, as family is everything. And to end today's episode with a nice quote, family comes first. Thank you for listening to today's episode of the GITM podcast. That was episode 7, of which I spoke about Fantastic Four Volume 6 Issue 1. As always, feel free to leave a review, gives me an idea as to how I'm progressing when it comes to the show, and how much better can I get. You guys can tell me that in a review, whether that's on Apple Podcasts or just on any other podcast app. As I said before, contact details, getinthemecha for Twitter and getinthemecha@gmail.com if you wish to contact me. Next episode, as I've said multiple times, I will be speaking about Deceased Issue 1 to 3, so a bit more scope on that, as I've read up a bit more on that. I'd love to do more Fantastic Four reviewing. I haven't been a major fan of Fantastic Four previously. I just don't think it was a major thing I got into, maybe because I was slightly discouraged after watching the Fantastic Four TV show during my childhood, I don't know, but I would love to get into more Fantastic Four. I'm enjoying it quite a lot and I'm actually seeing where it shines, so I'd love to continue on with this and hopefully you guys enjoy listening to it as well. Also, feel free to check out the previous episode of which I spoke about the Kyoto Impure King arc from Aono Exorcist. I spoke about how that arc worked and all the technicalities, structure, and where I think it fell down and where I think it was really good. So feel free to check that out as well. But that is going to wrap it up for today's episode. I have been your host Jamal today. I hope you enjoyed it. Have a lovely day, have a lovely week. Hopefully I'll see you next week. Goodbye. The music in this production goes as follows: Go Lucky by Chasers Gaming, Mandatory Overtime by Joth, Salty Ditty by Kevin MacLeod under Incomtech.com. The sound effects in today's production goes as follows: sound effects from Subspace Audio,